Hello, I'm Tim. My partner in podcasting crime is Marcus.
G'day, Tim.
We are one newsman and a web guy. And this week, covered some territory in the stuff we talked about this week that was just going on in the world, news-wise.
Yeah, we like to use the scattergun approach, don't we? It's right out there this week.
We were all over the shop. This week looked at, I put our listeners and you, newsman, put everyone on alien alert.
Yeah, it was like the X-Files, like which one of us is Mulder, the other one. Scully?
Yeah, I think we were both Mulder, probably.
Yeah, yep.
No Scully.
Yeah, interesting take on alien life forms and whether they're here already.
Yeah. Look, hey, we haven't found evidence of any yet. But maybe we've been looking in the wrong place. So we'll talk about that. Our very own Adelaide hero doctor, the guy who, during the Thai cave disaster, covered himself in glory.
Yeah, we'll look at what it actually means for him. It was a unique set of circumstances that saw him become a massive hero. What does it mean for him now?
And one of my favourite sports people, followed him for a long time, ins and outs of his career, Cristiano Ronaldo.
Yes, he is quite the man, isn't he?
Yeah, I actually really only learned about him this week. I've known who he was, but he was in the news this week because he's turned in some astonishing medical results, which became newsworthy because it's kind of weird. Can we call him a freak?
I think so, in the best positive way, if you were to use that term.
Yeah, freak in a good way.
Yes, evergreen champion. Let's just put it that way. To use a cliche I wheel out in many a report.
Yeah, he's just taking it one game at a time. Also, I was surprised to discover this week that scientists are on the verge of getting us set up for telepathic communication. To me, that sounded like just not even science fiction, complete fantasy.
Mm.
Telepathic communication, one brain communicating with another brain, I did not realize was possible. A study out this week says it is possible. It is already happening and could start to be developed in a kind of commercial way.
Tim, I must admit, I found it hard to get my head wrapped around this one, but it's definitely worth a discussion and it's quite exciting to think that it could happen and just around the corner, really.
Awkward pause there because I was trying to telepathically tell you to stop talking and you ignored me.
Sorry.
So we've got some work to do on our telepathy. I hate the word telepathy. I'm not actually sure how you meant to say it.
Telepathy?
Telepathy sounds much better.
Yeah.
I was putting the emphasis on the wrong syllable. All right, well, that's it. That's what we're going to get into this week. Let's just go straight to it. Let's do it now. All right. Marcus, we know each other pretty well now.
Yes, we do.
Can I ask you a personal question?
Oh, okay.
Do you believe in aliens?
This is one I wrestle with constantly. I was brought up in a religious family, Tim. So it was all about, you know, God created the world, Adam and Eve, and it was all Earth-centric.
Yep.
But as you get older, you see there's actual proof of a universe beyond Earth and way bigger than just our solar system. And you think, surely one little rock in the whole of all the universe is not the only place where there could be living things. So a very long, rambly answer. But yes, I believe there could be other things out there.
Yeah, I have a similar thought, which is that the scale of the universe is just too big. Like, it just seems probable there's something in some kind of way out there. But at the same time, the conspiracy theories I don't buy into.
No.
Government cover-ups, I just I just don't see it happening. So
I mean, you look at all of our advances in research and science and how far we've got away from home in terms of humans and even just our satellites and things like that.
Yeah.
We really haven't explored, we've explored a piece of dust.
Skimmed the surface.
That's the one. That's about it.
So probably out there, but I really need to see some hardcore data.
Yeah.
You want evidence. We need evidence, really. And all we can say is, so far, no evidence.
No.
But this week, interesting development. Some brainiacs at the University of Cadiz in Spain. They published this
good
new
one.
Yeah, well, you're alum from there.
Yeah, big fan of it.
Yeah, well, it's my favorite Spanish university. They've published a report this week saying essentially that aliens may exist, but we are blind to them. So a way of explaining this is we are humans, we are looking for aliens, but we're looking for signs of aliens that would be quite human-like. You know, like we want to hear sounds bouncing back maybe from outer space.
Yes.
Ideally, we would want to see, we want to see images of them.
That's where I'm at.
Yeah, but that's all, those things, those traits of having, you know, like being visible and making noise are quite human traits.
Mm.
What they're saying is, oh, hey guys, you know, aliens may in fact resemble in no way humans. Maybe they are here among us.
Mm.
Maybe when you have deja vu, maybe that is an alien tinkering in your head.
Oh.
Maybe when you, what other phenomena happen that could be explained by they are out there and they're here. They may even be visiting us. Maybe that's where the some of these people who talk about, I don't know, experiencing weird things or getting in touch with all this
or
stuff.
Or a cold chill, like you get a shake or something like that.
Yeah. Like some people might think that's ghosts. Maybe, are they aliens? I don't know. Anyway.
Tell me more, because at this stage it's sounding a bit flimsy.
Well, it only gets worse from here. Okay, this is what they say. What we are trying to do with this differentiation is to contemplate other possibilities. I wish I could read English. That would help me get through this.
It's the aliens decoding what...
No, there's no excuse. Here we go. I lift my game. For example, beings of dimensions that our minds cannot grasp or intelligence is based on dark matter or energy, which make up almost 95% of the universe and which we are only beginning to glimpse. There is even the possibility that other universes exist, as the texts of Stephen Hawking and other scientists indicate. So I don't know what we're meant to do with that. They're just saying, well, it could be out there, but you know, we'll never know because we're not equipped to detect them.
Why don't, if there are aliens, why don't they want to speak to us?
Have they had? Look, you're missing the point. Maybe they are. If you know, it's how.
Well, they're not getting any. So yeah, maybe they're frustrated that we're not talking back in their way.
You could just say, you know, if you had never seen a ladybird in your whole life, and people had said to you, you know, I've seen these ladybird things, but you had never seen one before, you'd be like, why aren't the ladybirds communicating with me? Well, Marcus, how can they? What do you want? Like, if you haven't seen one, that's not their fault.
Yeah, okay.
Anyway.
They could fly by and hold a little miniature sign. No, I'm missing the point. I'm not thinking fourth dimensionally enough.
Yeah, let's get into that. And even the fifth, sixth, and seventh dimensions,
yeah,
I think is what they're getting at here. So I don't know what that means for scientists. I don't know where they go to from here, because what else can you do? Well, I mean, we're limited by our human faculties, sort of. Although maybe technology will get us to a point where we can see these invisible things that may be walking among us.
It's a bit creepy, though, now you've said that. So any unexplained feeling or activity that I see from now on, I will now think that is something trying to communicate with me rather than just something weird.
Yeah. Would it be strange to just carry a Ouija board and say, if there's you, alien, let me know. Move the cup on the board.
Oh, glorious ladybug. Ladybird, come to me. Speak to me.
They do exist, by the way. They are out there. I have seen them. The ladybirds, I mean.
Tim, earlier this month, the whole world was watching as a young soccer team and their coach were trapped in a flooded Thai cave, and the rescue operation that followed, truly inspirational. I must admit, at the time, some of the early comments, I thought, this is a doomed mission, but everyone got out safely. Unfortunately, one volunteer died in the rescue, but apart from that, a really uplifting story.
That happened? I didn't catch any of that. I remember seeing it.
The whole bit.
Yeah,
sarcasm.
The biggest story in the world for the week that it was happening, really, wasn't it?
Mm. It was. It just had all the ingredients of an ideal news story for everyone involved. I'm taking a step back from actually the unfortunate situation where lives were put at risk, but number one, young sporting team that has appeal, that has news value. A scenario that can be easily put into images. So a flooded cave, some GoPro vision, and experts from around the world coming together to plot a rescue plan and a race against time made it all a perfect story.
Yeah, had the ticking clock in the background. Mm. And from the narrative point of view, in the lead up to trying to get the boys out, when the diver tragically passed away, then the stakes went through the roof.
Mm.
At that point, it was like, well, if that guy didn't make it,
a Navy SEAL,
what good grief, what hope do these kids have? Anyway.
Now, I guess people are wondering, why are we talking about it now? It's been a few weeks now. But this week, the Australians involved in the rescue mission were honoured in Canberra, bravery medals, that sort of stuff.
The other thing with this story, and you're right, that is happening now, but I initially felt just finding them was the end of it. Like, oh, okay, good, we found them.
Mm.
End of story. But then the thing with this story was to hear about it or just to read about it was not close to the reality of a situation in real life where the flooded cave had currents running through it, where they were in conditions that were just so difficult, where the boys were malnourished.
Inexperienced,
all the factors you don't think of, even in terms of like how the distance they had to travel, kilometres and kilometres, the narrow part, how narrowest bit of the cave got to, all these factors that you can just, you know, toss off in a sentence in a story, but in reality, terrible conditions. And the guy who, I don't know if I've just dubbed him this or if we're all calling him Adelaide's Hero Doctor.
I think that is a very fair and commonly used tag.
Richard Harris, he's been given the Star of Courage. One of the elements that I had never even thought of until he spoke about this week was that he was in there and sort of they sedated each of the kids before they came out because if they had panicked on the way through, they said that would have spelt, you know, probably doom for a lot of them. So sedating them. But he has said this week that he was essentially guessing sort of what dose of drugs to give the kids. And he even said the first boy that he had to administer the drugs to was a guess. He said the first child was an experiment in a way. So, you know, I had never thought of that. You just think, oh, good, the doctor's in there. He'll help them. He knows what to do.
Mm.
How much pressure on him working in those conditions to get the dose just right?
Yeah, we just assume that, you know, they can do all the proper tests and monitor the kids' health and weight and things like that. But it was such a tight time frame. There would have been a bit of guesswork. When he says guesswork, though, I think this is a man of vast experience and a lot of miles travelled in tough situations, probably nothing like this, but he must have had a very good estimation.
Yeah, well, I mean, let me just clarify. He said that he was contacting specialists in Australia, talked to a heap of people in Australia. He said, I talked extensively with a variety of specialists in Thailand and took a lot of their advice on board. So he was like, you know, it seems like a lot of his time was spent researching, talking to other experts, getting as much info as he could, and then, you know, kind of had to sift all that boil that down to, you know, he was the one who had to make the final call, you know, collate everything he had discovered and then make a final call on it. So it was an informed guess, and, you know, he did a lot of hard work, clearly. And it
What would have been the... So would they have become too sedated that they lose consciousness and can't breathe at all? Yeah. Would that be the concern?
Yeah, I guess so. Or not sedated enough and they do panic. He said that, you know, obviously he's a good doctor. He's administered drugs before, but he says, I'd never done it in the back of a cave on malnourished skinny Thai kids before. He said, that for me was the most frightening part of the week.
Yeah, it's amazing. The other thing that I have enjoyed about this latest installment of the story is how heroes are always humble.
Mm.
They never go, yes, I nailed it.
Yeah.
I guess it's because that's the people that become heroes, are brave, they're focused, and not too much into themselves.
You wonder what else he'd done in his career. It's without really knowing him or his whole story. You wonder if almost his whole life, everything he had done, culminated in this moment, this like week of intense pressure where it's, okay, crunch time. You've learned a lot. You've done a lot. Now's the time to deliver Dr. Harris. And like a champion, he's just knocked it out of the park for six.
And unfortunately, his father passed away while he was in Thailand. But once again, that almost seems like a culmination of his life experiences coming together.
Mm.
His father knowing at his deathbed that his son had done something truly remarkable and brave.
Yeah.
It's a nice way for his father to remember his son in his final moments.
Yep. And, you know, like within one week, he's delivered on everything he's learned through his life. And then now for the rest of his life, in a sense, he can kind of, you know, quote unquote, cash in on that 1 week of work. He's now a hero. He's got Star of Courage. You know, as if, I mean, I'm sure his doctor services were in demand before, but as if he wouldn't be the most in demand doctor in the country, he'll probably, you know, he could write books, he could do TV, he'll be an in-demand, like, public speaker. He'll be talking about how to perform under pressure,
mm-hmm.
how to deal with stressful situations. You know, like, he's a made man now.
And ironically, at the ceremony for these brave people was Sir Peter Cosgrove, and he is in the exact same boat. He came back from conflict, and his life unfolded much differently after that point, and became known as Peter Cosgrove.
Yeah.
The speaker, what do you call him, Governor General?
Yep. Oh, and then he became the Chief of Defence, I think, after
Timor,
didn't he? On the back of the reputation he built for himself.
Mm.
You wonder, does everyone get that chance? Do we all get that moment where, okay, it's now or never. Here you go.
I'm waiting. and a lighthearted end to this story. Some journalists asked him after receiving the medal. The doctor was asked, you know, this is a hobby of yours, cave diving. Are you hanging up the scuba gear?
Mm.
And he said, no, I'm going with my buddy to do some cave diving in a couple of weekends' time where the water is a lot clearer.
Yes.
And a lot easier.
Good idea.
But not telling anyone where to go, because obviously you don't want TV cameras ruining that cleansing experience of getting back to what you love without danger.
You wonder if he paused for a moment after this whole thing, like, is scuba diving through caves, whatever he does, is that really what I want to keep doing? But then on the flip side, he'd probably also be thinking, well, you know, I've seen the worst possible outcome and we got through it. So anything else now, walk in the park.
All right. Did you want to do the other one? Or?
Yeah.
Just have to wrap it up in about five.
Just want to go solo, just do an editorial. This week, Imran Khan was...
So is he still a politician or...?
I think he's running.
Oh, okay.
I guess.
Tim, Imran Khan, best known for his abilities on the cricket field, a Pakistan all-rounder, a heartthrob, and in his latter years, known as a real leader in Pakistan and in politics, basically.
You know this reference. What was the late show and Rob Sitch, I think you said?
Like a tiger.
I knew you'd not. Like a tiger. That was Imran Khan. And, yeah, he has this image of being a great cricketer, but also like a bit of a, I don't know, man about town, to use a euphemism.
Yep.
A playboy, I think he has been described as before.
Yeah, he was a super handsome, talented man. And now he looks... No, he still looks, he's still a handsome older man.
Yeah.
If I can say...
He'd be in his 60s.
Yeah, I guess so. Yep.
So we find out an embarrassing secret of his this week. Can't use a microwave?
Yes. A lot of people scoffed at that, but can everyone use the microwave to its full potential?
Oh, what else can
generally,
I do?
Generally, I know how to press, you know, the countdown for 10 seconds, 20 seconds.
Yeah, yeah.
But I wouldn't know how to do bake anything in it or cook anything.
Defrost. I'm a bit rusty on the defrost function.
Yeah, I've never, like, I'll do it, defrost something, still icy, go again.
Yeah.
It's slightly cooked.
Yeah. Okay, well, it's a trial and error thing. Yeah. So I don't know if he cannot use a microwave or if he just maybe has no need to use a microwave.
He came under fire for basically being such a big name and celebrity all these years. Everyone else does everything for him. So I'm sure there's a few other things he doesn't know how to use an ATM, I think.
Okay. Well, you do start to get this sense he's not exactly a man of the people then.
Yeah. Yeah. The other thing that came to my mind when hearing about this story was other famous sporting people and how they live in a bubble and how perhaps their perception on who they are is a lot different to, like, if you pull them out of the celebrity status they have, whether they are still a capable and valuable human being. I mean, that's
yeah,
a bit rough.
Yeah, yeah.
There's a few...
Not just sports people, though.
Yeah, that's it. It's like there's a few sporting people that I hear on TV and radio that I think they don't sound up to media standards.
Like, you really need to name names now.
No, I can't. I can't. But I wonder if they're being told, okay, you need to pep up your presentation a bit, or you need to emphasize a few words to give it a bit of entertainment.
Yeah. Do you know, I think I know what you're getting at, and it's a bit of a, you know, the Emperor's New Clothes thing, fable, fairy tale, whatever that is. It's like, who's going to tell the Emperor that he's wearing no clothes? Like, for most people would feel like, well, that's not really my job. Like, and that's what makes it tough for those maybe celebrities or high profile. Finding someone who actually will tell it to them straight, because not many people can benefit really, you know, in that selfish kind of way. What do you get out of delivering bad news to someone who's high profile? You may as well just go along with it. And then, you know, when they stumble and fall, that's their problem.
You're sort of relying on them having self-awareness and asking for help. That's the only way that these people would get some more awareness of their life.
The other tricky thing is that at some point, if you have asked the tough questions, got the hard feedback, discovered you're not wearing clothes, you know, time passes, years go by. Unless you're continually asking for that, seeking that feedback, I guess, then, you know, a little while later, boom, you got no clothes again. And you may not even realize.
Well, anyway, I thought it was an interesting story.
How do we end up there?
Oh, I took it there.
Okay.
Basically just I'm bitter and twisted.
Marcus, maybe we'll change the name of the podcast. You're the newsman. I'm the web guy.
Mm.
You're also kind of sports dude.
Okay. That could be a third person incorporated.
One newsman and a web guy and a sports dude.
Yeah.
Who is also the newsman.
Hmm.
But a sports man.
Less catchy.
It is a little less catchy. But, you know, the ins and outs of sport. Time to talk about this guy, Cristiano Ronaldo.
Yes, the most famous soccer player in the world.
Yeah, I don't follow soccer at all, but I know who Cristiano Ronaldo, you can't escape him. He's one of the world's megastars. They call him CR7 because I've just done a little bit of digging today. They call him CR7.
Right. I didn't know that.
CR is his initials and 7 was his number when he was at Manchester United.
I think
it was a bit of a, it might've been a Nike merchandising deal what I can, anyway. CR7 as we call him.
Sounds like a robot from Star Wars.
Yeah, it does a bit. he's in the news this week because we are being told that he's 33 years old, a young man by normal standards, but in the world of professional football, quite an old man, or at least getting towards, you know, the back end of his career, as they would say.
Yeah.
Or is he? Because now we hear he has the body of a 20-year-old. So he's knocked 13 kind of biological years off of his real age.
Well, he is very fit. He's often spotted with the shirt off.
He likes taking his shirt off, doesn't
he? And yeah, he looks very fit. I wouldn't have thought. Yeah, and how are they measuring this?
I'll tell you how they're measuring it, because he's just signed to a new club. He's gone to Juventus, I think it is.
Yeah.
So they do like a medical on their new players, and all his data has been published. So I don't, you know, obviously he has agreed to release the info, I imagine, because you don't.
Of course you would.
You don't just release people's medical info. I thought that was illegal.
Oh no, don't release this information that makes me sound mega fit.
Yeah. So here are how his numbers look. He has the body fat. His body fat percentage is 7%. Now, apparently, average professional footballer would have 11% body fat.
Right.
And just a normal, you know, Joe Blow, normal non-professional athlete, male, 22%. So already he is... That's a chiseled frame, isn't
he's
it?
He's lean.
He is lean. Muscle mass. Okay.
CR7 machine.
His muscle mass is 50%. Half of his entire weight is muscle.
Now, you are sounding excitable. How does that compare to other?
Okay, average.
Sorry, I didn't mean to dampen it. No. You sounded really pumped with it.
Well, don't you think to consider half of your body weight is just rock hard muscle? That's why he's taking his shirt off, I guess.
Yeah.
Average among other pro footballers, 46%.
Right.
So they're all pretty ripped.
Yeah.
Just a normal bloke, 33%.
Okay. Third so, muscle.
Mm. Yeah. In the World Cup, he ran 33 kilometres. Apparently, that's quite a lot. He also clocked in. He recorded the highest top speed. So he's a fast runner. Half of him is muscle and he can run like lightning.
He's Superman.
And also, interestingly, after the World Cup, they released details of the Athletic Performance Index. Tried to work out what that means. Couldn't find it. I guess it's self-explanatory, you know, how athletically you performed.
Yeah.
It would be nice to know exactly what
well,
that
measure. Well, I guess is it a combination of all those things, you know, flexibility, speed?
Well, this was specifically World Cup, so maybe how far they ran, how fast they ran, how long they played for. I don't know what else they could have measured. Anyway, whatever it is, they tally it up into an index. Now, I've got a printout here that I'm showing you. That's like the graph. And what the graph shows is the older the player gets, the lower their score is on this performance index.
Yes.
Now, I'm not sure what the end age range is there, but Ronaldo is very much towards the end, the older end of the scale.
It looks like 34 is where it really tails off.
Yeah, so it cuts off at 34 and he's at 33 and it's really tailing down by then. However, he has recorded the highest performance index score of anyone in the whole World Cup, which, just grabbing this bat, he's competing against, the age range goes down to 21. And he has scored higher than 21, 2, 23, 24. He's the best. So I'm thinking, not that he needs any more ideas about how to make more money, but imagine like the Ronaldo diet, the Ronaldo fitness regime. They probably already all exist. But if they don't, I'm sure they're about to.
I'm fascinated by aging well.
Okay.
And I feel like we should revisit this in 5 years' time. Because I think everyone, eventually injuries catch up.
And, yeah.
But yeah, he's keeping himself in tip-top shape. And the fact that, you're right, the speed, like I was thought when you first raised this story, I thought, oh, okay, he's super ripped, he's super talented, but he still got the speed? But he does.
He does,
and that
the speed.
That is the difference between an old man in sport and a young man in sport is generally that extra staying power and speed on the field.
Yeah. What I think would be an interesting study is because, you know, we have just compared pro athletes, in particular Ronaldo, against average male. And, you know, the pro athlete, you know, is hands down better shape. It'd be interesting to compare your average male at certain ages compared to average retired athletes at the same age. I wonder if there's a scenario, a situation where athletes, when they stop playing, you know, they were in such amazing condition for all their career. Do they go off a cliff when their career ends? I'm sure some don't, maybe even a lot don't. But interesting, take the average retired athlete and the average Joe. How do they match up?
Yeah, that would be good. That would be good. It seems more and more, though, that I don't know if it's the superficial world that we live in, or a greater awareness of health and what it means. But you see less and less athletes immediately after their retirement that lose their shape very, very quickly.
Yeah, true, true.
But
I have seen some headlines, even, you know, some detail on. They do a lot of longevity studies. They find parts of the world where people live the longest.
Mm-hmm.
And then they go there and they find out, hey, what do you eat? How do you exercise? Mm-hmm. What do you do? And I remember last time I looked into it, the bottom lines were, if you want to live really, really long time, two things you should do. One is live on a tropical island, and the other one is not have a job.
So stress and clean living, basically.
Yeah, something along those lines.
Yeah. Yep. Well, I'll be watching very carefully now on his career, because there was a lot of controversy about, I think he signed quite a long deal with Juventus.
Okay, yeah.
For a 33-year-old.
Yeah.
Whether his body holds up, because the amount of sports people I've seen that are ultra fit at that age, but they just can't sustain an injury-free run at it. And whether soccer is a good sport, where you're not getting as much impact. So it's all about running. It's about speed. It's about agility.
Yeah.
But you're not trying to back up after being smashed pillar to post like you would in an AFL game.
That makes me think of a weird thing. Swimming is one of the lowest impact sports you can do.
You're just going to blow my... Yeah,
yeah,
you're right.
But they peak earlier than any other sport. Like by the time you're out of your teens, you're done, which is weird.
Yeah. I mean, anyway. I reckon part of that's motivation as well. Like,
yeah.
They've been doing it for 15 years and they're only 28 or something.
It's a real mind game, swimming, isn't it?
Yeah.
Anyway, maybe that's another topic.
Anyway, we're going to go out and test our fat levels and get on the exercise bike, because this is making me feel a bit fat and lazy.
We spoke about a weird one before, Marcus, you know, that we're not looking for aliens in the right way.
Mm.
Whole spooky can of worms that opens up. Here's another one. We've all heard of telepathic communication.
Yes.
Kind of seems like another bit of a sci-fi thing.
Mm, very sort of alien-like. I can read your mind.
Yeah.
I know what you're seeing. I know what you're feeling.
Well, it's not so far-fetched. In fact, there's a very reputable doctor this week announcing that we will be communicating telepathically potentially within a couple of years.
Well, how has he come up with this, or how has she come up with this?
It is a he, Dr. Yes. Philip Alveda.
Mm.
He is a founder of a business called Cortical.ai. It's just, you know, smart stuff.
Sounds brainy.
Yeah. Anyway, there's a case in Canada where conjoined twins have separate brains, but their heads are joined.
Mm.
And scientists have kind of studied their brains and found that Each can sort of see what the other one sees, can sense what the other one senses through this connection between their brains. Dr. Phillips says it's about 2 million neurons. He says apparently that's not very many. Through these 2 million neurons, they can convey emotion, awareness, sensation, sight, vision, hearing.
I was just trying to picture how they're testing this. Do they, like, get a teddy bear and thrust it in the face of one and the other one goes, ooh, something like that? Or
I imagine that's exactly how they did it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I probably need a few of those neurons. Continue on.
So they've been studying the twins, and he says now we have a blueprint for a direct interface from one brain to another. So what these conjoined twins are doing sort of naturally, they can look at that, study it, and replicate it. He says this, I'll just quickly tell you this last quote of his, to find the twins and see the code between the different hemispheres of the brain and say, oh my God, if we can replicate just that code, we'll be able to transmit code from one brain to another.
So is there no talk of the actual, I mean, the heads are connected, so there is tissue interwoven between these two.
Yeah.
So surely that plays a part in the transferring of...
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and this is what he's talking about with there needs to be an interface. He says there's researchers at Yale and some other place. They have created a kind of fabric that's like tissue paper that can be laid over the brain beneath the skull. So you can send info to it, to the brain via this thing. By the way, I'm not a scientist.
You sound like it. So you sound very informed. not like you're just reading it.
The idea, the why they're even pursuing this is because it's almost a cure for blindness and deafness. He says where they can deliver digital information directly into parts of someone's brain. He says... we can have telepathic communication, not just the vision, but all our cognitive awareness. Imagine that. It's not a matter of if, it's a matter of when. They're going to be going inside people's heads within 2 years. They're already doing it in animals, rodents, and near human primates. It's happening. It's coming.
So how would that help a blind person?
Because they can see, they'll be able to see through someone else's eyes.
Right.
So, I mean... That seems weird to think, well, you know, what if I'm all of a sudden seeing what you're seeing? But I guess that is a, if they could achieve that, then it's not very far to jump to, you know, well, maybe you could just see through your seeing eye dog. Or
everything,
you know,
would look a bit low.
Well, yes.
You'd be looking at everyone's groins and sniffing it.
Yeah. That was a bad example.
No, I know what you mean.
But, you know, at that point, it's only a small jump then to essentially, you know, giving someone full vision via like some kind of proxy or, you know, substitute.
I love these exciting stories about what could be, but they never happen quick enough for me to think back and go, oh, wow, I heard about this, the rumblings of this early on and now it's going to happen.
I know. It always takes so long. And this doctor says at the moment, at least in the US, you can only open up someone's skull, like legally, if there's a medical reason to do it and the patient, gives permission.
Yes.
But they will be doing that within a couple of years. But then for everyone else, you know, any other kind of, I guess those are the sort of like experimental things that they might be doing. But he said like, getting telepathic thoughts via a microchip in your hat or a pair of glasses, yeah, that's going to be a long way off, because imagine the testing they'd have to do on that. I mean, by the time you're messing around with people's brains, the stakes are pretty high. So, yeah, probably not going to happen this year.
While I like what it could do for blind and deaf people, do we really want it to progress beyond that, though? I mean, do we really want to live through the eyes of others and see what they're thinking and feeling? I think it could be disturbing. It could be scary. And you could lose a lot of friends if you actually could tell what they actually thought of you.
This is literally going inside people's head, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, very scary in one sense. It reminds me of being John Malkovich, that movie where they all of a sudden could work out how to get... And if you were, like, for some reason people were interested to see what you were seeing, if you were a celebrity or something, or if you were, yeah, whatever the case may be, you could rent, maybe you could rent out time inside your head.
Yes.
Immediately people be thinking of business possibilities. But yeah, pretty weird. Very weird, in fact. I think, well, actually the doctor thinks, because I think you were kind of, maybe you were starting to head down a artificial intelligence apocalypse, Terminator style scenario.
Yeah, I always dumb it down and take it a bit Hollywood.
Yeah, well, he's addressed that. He said that the AI apocalypse is not going to happen. He said it's like incremental change, like you're talking about. It happens so slowly that there's never going to be a point where suddenly we're caught off guard.
Mm.
Plus this technology, he says, they don't have agency. They don't have a body. Fair point. Fair point. Who's going to take you over if they don't? Anyway.